Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. You can hear the show anytime you want to listen to it, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil computer services on santafe.radiocafe.org. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like to welcome now John Bowman. He is the executive director of the Santa Fe Film Festival, and Stephen Rubin, deputy director of the Film Festival. And the Film Festival of Santa Fe has already gotten underway, but it's really kicking off this Wednesday, the 28th of November. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary Charlotte.
Thanks for having us on.
It's great to have you. And so we're going to be talking about all the many manifestations of the film festival. How long has this institution been with us here in Santa Fe?
Well, this is our eighth season for the Santa Fe Film Festival, although we've actually had 2 years where we did festivals in the same time slot in the wintertime prior to that. So in a sense, it's 10 years and running.
And it's come a long way.
Well, yeah, in the beginning we definitely were very bootstrapped and very small, maybe about 5,000 tickets at most that first year, and now we're about 21,000 tickets.
And so you are showing films in all sorts of venues all across the city.
10 venues, yes.
And the films are really across the gamut. Local films representing New Mexico's burgeoning film industry, international films, documentaries, animation, comedy, tragedy.
Yeah, we're not a thematic festival. You know, we have seven categories, and we just show, you know, our jurors and then our curators and John and I with the final decisions. We pick, you know, we know our audiences, and we also try to expand our audiences, but we're not trying to, you know, be any kind of thematic. You know, we want to show a little bit of everything so that all the different patrons from Santa Fe and also coming from around the country and world will find at least 10 films that they'll love, if not more.
And actually, you know, we have the seven series that Stephen mentioned, but we're up to about 10 altogether, because what we've been doing the last few years is adding to the festival, not expanding the portions that we do ourselves, but partnering with other institutions like National Geographic, All Roads, and the New York Jewish Film Festival this year, who curate their own series, and those are rolled and wrapped into the larger festival.
Well, let's talk about those two. What's the National Geographic All Roads series?
That's a film series that National Geographic has done for about 3 or 4 years now, and those are all films made by indigenous filmmakers from around the world. They're not the kind of films that you see on the National Geographic channel, the documentaries that are about other cultures, but they're actually filmmakers from Aboriginal culture or Amazonian culture or any indigenous peoples doing their own films and speaking for themselves, telling their stories. Some of them are narratives, some are docs, or are also some animations among the group.
The distinction is they're not National Geographic sponsored. They're All Roads is a division of the very large National Geographic company, and they just like we do, you know, they get submissions and pick the films, as John said.
Yeah, and then in addition to the films, they have other components. It really is a multimedia kind of a extravaganza, because they are bringing in photographs from around the world. There are a couple of photographers, one from Nigeria and one from, Kazakhstan, I believe, that will be here. And then in addition to the photographs and films, they will have a world music concert that will be staging at the Lenzig with Tenawaran, which is a West African band, pretty popular. They opened once for the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Now, how do all these indigenous folks become filmmakers, get their hands on cameras, editing equipment, and distribution networks?
Well, National Geographic is certainly one of the groups that have been trying to provide for that. And one of the ways is through All Roads. They have a grant program, and they have seed money that they provide for indigenous filmmakers, young as well as older, to have their first experience at making films as opposed to being the subject of films.
And, you know, All Roads provides that. You know, I think their submissions doubled this year, so obviously there's more people. And surprisingly, more than our own government, a lot of these countries actually give money, grant money, to filmmakers, you know, to make their films. So.
Well, that's the model in a lot of the other countries overseas, because here Hollywood is such a strong force that the government really has never felt that compelled to to underwrite or underscore filmmaking because a lot of films are being made out in the studios and other countries. Really, if the government was not supporting them or they didn't have a film institution, there wouldn't be a film.
So that means that there are countries where the nature and sort of ethos of filmmaking is a lot less commercial than here.
That's correct.
Right.
So in this All Roads film series, are there any particular films that have really stood out to you as being particularly interesting?
I think one of the things that would be of interest here in New Mexico are a particularly strong component this year of titles that have a actual New Mexico basis. There are Navajo programs, two different series films, one collection of shorts that was curated by Charmaine Jackson from the film office, New Mexico Film Office. And they're all from Navajo filmmakers. And then another film called Miss Navajo, which is all about a beauty pageant and the quest to become Miss Navajo.
Yeah. And All Roads, you know, obviously they're in D.C. and they've been – they were just in L.A. and they've been in Sydney and New York and Vancouver. And apparently this Miss Navajo is the one that's really delighting crowds. So I would say when it comes time to buy your tickets, get on that one.
And we're going to be speaking to the directors and some actors in many of the films. In fact, this whole entire week on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe is devoted to the Santa Fe Film Festival. So it's going to be a veritable cavalcade of film here on and actually the rest of it's going to be in the baking company. So let's talk about the Jewish Film Festival.
Well, that's through the Jewish Film Museum and Society of New York. And Aviva Weintraub, the curator, will be here, which is great. And, you know, just like National Geographic's partnership started small, that's starting with four films. And they're actually going to start tomorrow, Tuesday, and two films on Tuesday and two films on Wednesday at the Film Center. And then they'll show again at the Film Museum, the former Jean Cocteau, during the main bar of the festival. And Aviva selected some films, and then John and I kind of finessed it to get what we wanted.
But and we wanted to present one of the titles, My Mexican Shiva, with Alejandro Springal as the director, because back when we had the very first Santa Fe Film Festival, the official Santa Fe Film Festival launch in 2000, his earlier film, Santitos, was named our best film for that season.
I remember that film.
It was so it was kind of nice to see that he had done another work and to bring it back.
This is something you must see after having done this for, 8 to 10 years, is young filmmakers starting off, their first film gets submitted, and then either their careers go somewhere or they don't, but this is one who's really moving on.
Well, we have a lot that do come back in our independent spirits, and now he's moving on to documentary. Colin Hoback, this is the second year in a row that he'll be here. Last year he did Freedom State, which was well-loved and one of my favorites. I don't know if you remember that. And now he's got a Monster Camp, a documentary about people that do that fantasy. I forget what they have a word for it, but, you know, that spend their weekends pretending that they're knights, Dungeons & Dragons, Lord of the Rings kind of thing.
Right.
So it's a very fun documentary. And another woman that we're very proud to be having back, I think she's a woman who's going to have a great career as a filmmaker, documentarian, is Neva Davenport, who was here with Parallel Lines a few years ago.
That was my pick of the festival, 2003, a tremendous movie, and I'm very glad that she – and we're hoping to have her on the show this week.
She's really switched gears with this film, focusing on an Iraqi filmmaker who managed to get a little blurb on MTV saying that because of Saddam Hussein and then because of, in his words, the American bombs, the invasion – that his career was ruined. And Liv Schreiber, who is an activist as well as an actor and a filmmaker, happened to be surfing through and saw it on MTV, got inspired, got involved with Nina, and they helped this guy to sort of try and get his career off the ground. And, you know, it's a wonderful documentary.
Yeah, although there's a little bit of the dog biting the hand that feeds in that,
there's some tension.
Film.
Yeah,
it's not all.
It's not a happy-go-lucky story.
No.
I mean, you know,
entirely.
And what's the name of that film?
That's Operation Filmmaker. But Liv Schreiber, what he did was he got this gentleman whose name I can't pronounce, but the Iraqi filmmaker, Mohamed, I think is his last name. He got him involved with the film that Liv Schreiber made based on a novel called the one with Elijah Wood.
In any case.
Yeah. It was a mainstream film, a beautiful film. So he got that filmmaker involved in that mainstream movie. Illumination is Everything. That's what that was called. And so that Iraqi filmmaker starred with Elijah Wood. So
there's a lot of Nina Davenport is an American filmmaker. There's also a lot of foreign films this year. Eye on the World, I think, is the series of foreign films.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a number of imports in our gala series. We've had past usually 5 or 6 galas, and this year we have 10. We really have kind of expanded that outward. Basically, a lot more of the studios have relationships with the festival now. And
how instead can you do just, 10 galas in 5 days?
It's kind of rough, but how we've staggered it is usually on most nights there's one at 6 and then there's another one at 8, 8:30, that sort of thing. So someone that was really dedicated and very eager to see all the big hits ahead of time, sneak
That's
previews.
That's 5 evening gowns.
That's correct.
Yeah. And we get filmmakers, you know, saying, hey, my film's at 10 in the morning. Is anyone going to be there? I'm like, yeah. They will. They really are.
And this is a morning town. I've noticed that when we book titles.
That's right. People are listening
morning,
right now.
People that are coming from elsewhere, they're really nervous about it, and they're all afraid that there'll be no one there. And in point of fact, a lot of the shows that are early on have bigger crowds than the later.
Well, one of the reasons it's a morning town is that no restaurant kitchen besides Denny's seems to be open after about 8:30 in the evening.
Yeah. I think it's
although
because
we
rectify
that with our events, but
maybe it's because they're all getting up to listen to your show.
I think that must be the reason.
Yeah.
We're talking to John Bowman and Stephen Rubin of the Santa Fe Film Festival, which, it opens officially this Wednesday, but really there's already stuff going on. What's been happening over the weekend? What's happening tonight and tomorrow?
Well, Friday we started the New Mexico Film Expo.
Yes, and that's a program that we started 3 years ago to highlight and give a platform for New Mexico filmmakers. And when we started that series, it was fairly small. I mean, there was signs that it was growing, but still we probably had 25 entries. This year we had closer to 90. So it was a case of having to really scramble to pack all those titles in. And what we ended up doing, which disappointed some of the filmmakers, is that we had to be very selective. If they gave us 3 or 4 films, we didn't necessarily show all 3 or 4 films. We picked 1 or 2 and then left it at that.
Yeah. But the beauty is what we did, it was really important to John. Thanks goes to him. So if you're in that film expo and you see John Bowman, thank him, because he really made sure that those films also get a screening in the main festival, which starts on Wednesday at the Film Museum, so that this year, you know, if you're in the film expo, you're in the festival, you know.
In the past, we did the expo the week before the festival, and that was it. Now we've had
so that was
screen.
Sort of like the junior version. That
yeah, it was
went
a little
to.
Bit yeah. like the minor leagues,
right.
And we
warm
felt like
up, and we felt that would need to be integrated so that the filmmakers from the state, because we represent the state, that they would be part of the big
party. Yeah, it supports
them,
and it means when they go to apply to other festivals, instead of saying, "Well, we were in the next film expo," that we were in Santa Fe Film Festival, which has more status
now. How much status does it have? I mean, where do we stack up? This is a film festival that has really come into its own very recently, I think.
Well, there's almost 2,000 festivals, and I would say, John would probably agree, that we're certainly between 50 and 75 right now of respectability and reputation. And by the time – this is year 8, so in the next 2 years, we'll get well and above 50, I think. And thanks to –
However you rank that, I mean.
Yeah. Nobody
there,
really ranks
there actually
it,
was a book that was published a few years back that ranked all the festivals, but that's been out of print for some time now and has not been done recently. And really is really difficult to gauge, because I guess if I was a filmmaker, I would rank the highest festival as those that took my work.
Yeah.
Right.
But as more filmmakers, you know, come back and they always tell me when I'm at other festivals and I see them, and sometimes they don't even know I'm with this festival, I'm there representing films that I've made. They say, oh, I hear that you're from Santa Fe. I hear there's a great festival there. So the reputation grows, and also through our sponsors and these partners that John and I were talking about, you know, it just keeps building and the reputation grows. So
we have seen too that in the last year or two, most of the growth for the festival has been in not only out of town visitors, but out of town sponsors and national sponsors. And so that's a sign that we're starting to kind of pick people's interests outside of Santa Fe. Mm.
So not only filmmakers, but film viewers come from out of town, stay at our hotels, walk around the plaza, and then go see, what, seven films a day or whatever?
Yeah.
If they come from out of town, they tend to be a lot more dedicated, and they tend to actually go to four or five films and try to get their money's worth and see everything and really experience it all. The ones in town will go to movies, but usually at most one a day, two a day maybe.
One of our new sponsors is CBS, and I brought that up to mention that the gentleman who's representing them said that a lot of his friends say that they plan their Decembers around coming to the festival and staying through New Year's because it's such a wonderful time in Santa Fe, and the festival launches it, and then, you know, Christmas Eve everyone loves and New Year's. So it's that time of year that a lot of people look to coming here, and those are people from California and New York and Colorado. And
what's been interesting to me, too, we actually even have start of a small, very small international contingent that come mostly from West Canada, and they come here to see the festival and to escape the cold.
That's sort of borderline international.
Yeah.
And they're not really escaping the cold usually.
Yeah, it is not necessarily very warm. Although, let's talk about New Mexico's burgeoning film industry. How are we doing? Do you see the quality of New Mexico-made films improving each year?
You see the quality of all submissions going up because of the accessibility, and in the next 2 years, it's really going to burgeon with what's known as HD, high definition, because those cameras are not that expensive, and you really, even people who don't think they know the difference when you see an HD film. We have a few this year. By next year and the year after, we'll have a lot more. And just in general, even without HD, people are learning how and to use the equipment. It's a lot easier. You don't have to go to film school. You don't have, you know, and we've all grown up on movies at this point. You know, people don't read as much anymore. They watch movies. So we all understand the language of film a lot more than in the past. And the ability with 2,000 festivals to get into at least a few with something that you've made is really, you know.
Well, that's interesting. People don't have to go to film school for technical reasons, but surely they have to learn the aesthetic and historical components of making a film.
Well, you do, but you can – I didn't go to film school, and John didn't go to film school. You can learn by watching the movies and reading all these great books. And what I suggest to people, whether they ask me at our own festival or when I'm somewhere else, is, you know, whoever was going to pay all that money for film school, grandma, credit card, savings, take that money, volunteer for a few years like I did and John did, or like John did, start a festival and get to know, because, you know, in Santa Fe we're a little luckier, but every town has got to have some industry people and talented filmmakers. Get to know them, and then you know, obviously it's content that starts it all, so get a good script together, get people to help you perfect it and make that film without ever – you can do it. A lot of our films are made for $100,000 or less and look like they were made for a couple mil, you know.
And you might spend that amount of money on film school.
You'll spend that on your textbooks at film school.
You know,
or at least your room
on
and board.
The points that Stephen made, I had to beg a little bit of difference with some of it, because I do think that the technical quality of the filmmaking has improved, and I do think that the elements of the film making have improved in the sense of how music is used and the understanding of the editing process and all those.
If I said it didn't, then
I think that where some of the newer filmmakers have trouble is in having a sense of that great storytelling arc, and that does relate to not reading. I mean, I do really think that reading is important for filmmakers as well as anyone that wants to be an artist, in sense of being able to engage an audience dramatically.
Yeah, you are telling a story, but that's not something you learn in film school. That's
something you kind of have to learn
at your bedside when your parents read aloud
to
you.
Yeah, it's something that you learn by nurture, and it's also something I believe that a lot of people are just born with, that ear for that dialogue and that ability, that attention to detail of characters, which pertains to directing, writing, and acting, all of it, you know.
So what are some of the highlights from New Mexico's burgeoning film industry?
Well, you know, most of what we do would be works that are below the studio level for New Mexico films. We do a lot of first-time filmmakers' works, student filmmakers, and it's been encouraging to see so many people picking up cameras, as Stephen mentioned, who are high schoolers and are in college and making films. And the technology has made it more accessible to where people can actually not just do a 2-minute film, but do a 30-minute film or 40-minute film and try to stretch out some. And so we're showing a lot of those works that are almost a feature, but not quite.
A half-an-hour film is something – I've seen some wonderful half-hour films at film festivals, and it makes you – in a way, sad, because you know these things aren't going to be shown anywhere except for film festivals.
Right. Yeah, that's always the bugaboo. The technology has really made it possible for people to make the works, but then how do they go about getting them seen? And right now, the distribution system is kind of broken down a little bit. Most of the larger theatrical chains would only show works that come from big distributors, and so there are very few alternatives to that kind of channel except for festivals. And increasingly, some of the programs like the Film Center has, most towns have alternative.
Well, there's also – we're overlooking the major change that's turning the industry on its head is Internet. And just like I was reading an article – I'll just briefly say, you know, about Radiohead selling its new album outside, and a lot of major – Madonna even – avoiding record companies, and the same thing can happen. You know, it's hard to make money because it's on YouTube and it's free. There aren't too many successful websites that sell movies. There are some, but in terms of just the exposure, it's there.
No, the exposure is there.
But there's tons of hits, but in terms of making money and distribution.
How you support yourself as an artist is not.
But there are a lot of people working on how to make that happen, and I think in the next few years there'll be some progress. Hopefully.
Well, that's – I mean, it's an interesting question. People – artists want exposure. And so then the question is, where is that link when exposure actually turns into a career?
Well, I think everybody – you know, if you make a short, you know, obviously you're making that short, and sometimes it may be because you have SAG actors and you have to go under 35 minutes or you have to pay them. And even if that's not the case, just the constraints of time and everything else. But obviously your goal is maybe that short, like some successful examples like Bottle Rocket or Billy Bob Thornton's Sling Blade were shorts. The beginning of Sling Blade is a short. Bottle Rocket was redone, but they you know, made contacts and got their films made into features. And so that, I'm sure, is most short filmmakers' goal is to reach that feature level, and obviously we're not all going to get there, but a lot will, you know.
Yeah, the short really is more of a calling card. Something someone puts together, not because they expect that they're going to be able to retire to Tahiti on that calling card, but just that they can use that to launch a career.
I mean, even if you win Best Short, you know, certainly your career is going to start to take off. You're going to get attention. You're going to get producer's attention at any festival, not just ours. But you're not going to sell your Best Short, most likely. I mean, Sundance, IFC do show some shorts, you know, in between their programming. But
now there is this question that I always wonder, because I see a lot of films, not only to talk to people from the show, but then because there are some other films that we're not talking about on the show that looked really good. And so I end up seeing, you know, 20 to 25 films before and during the Santa Fe Film Festival. It's a kind of a burnout thing. And here you are. You have so many films to choose from. You reject many films. You take the films that you think are the best, and there's still some real duds that creep in. How is your selection process go? I'm not saying this year, but I'm saying last year I saw some films that I could not believe you chose for the film festival.
Well, that's a matter of taste. We have 30 jurors, and we try to get every film watched 3 times, and then basically what happens is the jurors, you know, because I'm in the office, they come to me, and if they say it's bad, particularly quality-wise, then it goes away. And if they say it's very good, I watch it. If I think it's something John and I are interested in, John and I don't have exactly the same taste, but we know what we try to know what's appropriate. Obviously, we fail sometimes, so then it goes to John, and then we decide. But we turn down films that win awards at other festivals. You know, either they're not appropriate for audiences, or we just don't.
Yeah, and it's always a subjective kind of a thing in the sense that we'll program titles oftentimes that we may not personally care for, but we know that other groups in the community would want to see.
Yeah.
We're talking to John Bowman and Stephen Rubin about the Santa Fe Film Festival, which has already started but officially opens this Wednesday, November 28th. Would you say that you might have different standards for New Mexico films than you would for nationally distributed films?
Certainly.
We showcase them.
And that's a pretty common thing. Toronto Film Festival is one of the world's largest film festivals, and I've attended that festival, and they have a very large active component series that are of Canadian films, shorts and documentaries and features made in Canada. And I can tell you that if you go to your other series, those are the films that you're going to see at film festival circuits all around the world. But if you go to the Canadian series, if only 10% of them make it out of Canada and are seen even in the United States, that's probably a high number.
And Toronto's
and that's because they're doing what we're doing, which is a little bit of local showcasing.
Toronto's a good example to segue back into your question about New Mexico filmmaking, because Toronto and New Mexico, thanks to our governor, and they pre-existed us, but we've been pulling away, are the places that are pulling Hollywood mainstream. But in terms of what's going on locally, I'm not going to speak for Toronto, but New Mexico, you know, we have just a wealth of talent in terms of credible actors, some who do get cast in the major pictures here. Sometimes they get two lines, some get major parts. And we have plenty, thanks to the past few years, to the New Mexico training programs at the community college in College of Santa Fe, and plenty of directors and writers. The thing that's lacking, and I'm saying this as a call, is producers. There's nobody that I know of that's spending any significant amount of money on the filmmakers that do want to get beyond a 20-minute short, that have features, that are great scripts, There are plenty of wealthy people in Santa Fe. It's a risky business, but it's a fun business. And hopefully in the next few years, maybe the film office and through the festival's encouragement of the film expo type films and just anything else that we can get some money.
So you really need to cultivate producers here. You've got all sorts of creative talent, but you need more producers. Very interesting.
Yeah, there's really, unless if I'm wrong, I don't want to say nobody to insult anyone, but there's very few people that are out there saying, oh, you've got a great script, let me read it, and you've got these great local or out-of-town actors. Okay, we'll help you make it, you know.
I think that will come in time. There has to be basically a few large runaway successes for that to spawn the beginning of a –
We should give a shout-out.
Just like what happens in Austin, you know, when Rodriguez and all those guys
– Well, Linklater started it.
Yeah.
And we should give a shout-out to our local producers, Alton Walpole and Luca Ceccarelli. Luca's already done two films this year, and Alton has done – many films.
Many for years.
For years. So they are working at it, but they're not people who raise the money. They're people who help people with the film. So
now every year there are special awards given to certain people, and this year tell us about some of the awardees, and there are more women than usual.
We have three women.
Yeah, three women of our luminarias, and one of them is Marina Golduskaya, who is from St. Petersburg originally in Russia. She is noteworthy not only as a world-class documentarian, but she made the very first film in Russia that dealt with the subject of Stalin and the gulags in the 1930s and 40s. It was a film that was initially banned and then subsequently praised highly and won numerous awards at film festivals, including in Moscow, as well as Sundance here in the States.
And she's had a career making a variety of different documentaries. She's known as a humanitarian, so she does a lot of those kinds of films. But she also does profiles of artists and musicians. She really is broadly based, and she's been teaching, heading the UCLA documentary program for a very long time. So
there's some other women as well.
Carol Littleton is another one of our tributees. She's a exceptional editor. She's done all kinds of films, from comedies to serious dramas to E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Places in the Heart. A lot of films that are very highly beloved by audiences. In particular, she worked with Lawrence Kasdan on Big Chill and Silverado and many of his pictures.
Are there not too many women in as editors?
No. That's very rare.
Really?
That
there's really two main. She's done about 40, and the one who's done more is who's probably twice her age is Thelma Shoemaker, who always gets nominated and wins half the time for the Scorsese films.
Mm-hmm.
So Carol Littleton is you know, the second most prolific female editor.
Yeah, although there are a few others. Betsy Blanquette, who lived in Santa Fe for a number of years, edited El Norte. And so there are a few women in the business, but not many. It's definitely been a male-dominated
profession. I mean, even in our submissions, it's really unfortunate, and it's not because of anything that we're doing as curators, but you know, more submissions are coming from men, especially in features. Documentaries, I think there might be more women.
Documentaries, I think there are as many women as men, but the feature film, maybe not so much.
Yeah. I wonder why that is. Why that difference?
Not sure.
I don't know. Probably a good question for New Mexico Women in Film.
or
a challenge to them to get...
Yeah. We'll hold that for future conversations. Who are some of the other tributees?
Alanis Obensaven is one of our other honorees. She is really the one of the original native filmmakers. She's from Canada. Actually, she was born in New Hampshire and then grew up in Quebec area. But she's been making films for a good 30, 35 years. She's the subject of a new book published by the University of Nebraska, Bison Book Press, and it's actually the very first full-length book devoted to a Native filmmaker in its entirety. And we're very honored that she not only will be joining us, but presenting what she says will be her last major work. We'll see.
But we never believe that.
No, we don't believe that.
And then we have our, thanks to Kodak, last year we had Laszlo, who unfortunately passed away recently, and it was very... Great
Laszlo.
Honor to have him, Laszlo Kovacs, the director of photography. So this year, thanks to Kodak again, we have John Bailey, who is Carol Littleton's husband, and they worked together on a lot of Kazan films, and they worked together on a film which was one of the first films. You know, he's a very well respected, you know, done almost 60 projects as you know, a colorist and a camera operator and a director of photography in cinema, but he's also in 2001 he did Anniversary Party, which was one of the first successful Hollywood-ish digital films, which has worked out serendipitously that our Maverick Award is going to Alan Cumming, who worked with Raul Trujillo, who's a major part of our festival this year, a local who was in Apocalypto New World, and Raul and Alan just shot a film called Tin Man. So Alan has a new film called Suffering Man's Charity, which is a very outlandish, artistic, gross-out, beautiful film. And
gross-out, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, just that. I say that as a warning because it is beautiful, but there are moments that will make you crawl a little bit. Not in a terrible way. And so Alan and Jennifer Jason Lee wrote and directed this Anniversary Party that Carol Littleton and John Bailey worked on. So
Jennifer Jason Lee, an amazing actress.
Anniversary Party is phenomenal. It blew me away when I saw it in 2001. And when I revisited it recently, it stood up.
Yeah. Now, here's something that has happened in the past. There's a movie that was made with very good equipment and so on and so on. And then at the Santa Fe Film Festival, it's shown on DVD and it's kind of grainy on the screen. Are we past that or is that still going to happen this year?
We will have most of our titles shown in a much more advanced format than that. There are a few DVD screenings that occur. It's usually a case of student works that the student just doesn't have the means or the knowledge to put it onto other formats. And in those cases, you know, basically we're showing it because it is a first work and it's a young filmmaker and we want to make sure that their voice is heard. But the audience should be aware that some of their titles would be in that format.
And, a lot of the New Mexico films are at that level because, as I said, these are people that are paying out of their pocket to make their movies, so they don't have that money to output to any of these higher quality formats at this point.
Yeah, although the digital equipment is changing and improving to the nature where even the stuff on DVD sometimes looks as good as what film looked like a few years back.
Really?
Yeah, the DVDs we're getting – this year we got 3 VHS submissions out of, you know, 1,000. And the DVDs are higher quality. You know, they're no longer just, you know, burning it on minor software. They're really authorizing, as it's called, and it's
it makes a big much, difference.
It makes a big difference, and the projectors that we're getting from the various venues that already have them are from Santa Fe Audiovisual or AV Systems are much better. You know, it's a lot cheaper to get a good projector, so I think the quality of both the quality in terms of the look and also the quality, as you addressed, hopefully in terms of what we selected, will be stronger.
So you had about 1,000 submissions. You chose 230 films. Some of those are short, so it's 70 programs total, 70 mm-hmm. distinct programs. Have both of you seen every film that was chosen?
No. Although we actually have 107 programs total.
107?
Yeah, 107. That would include all the different series, like All Roads series and the New York Jewish Film Festival series and the New Mexico Film Expo. But it totals out to 107 with about 250 titles. And those actually came from a pool of maybe 2,000 films because we had our submissions, but then each of the other partner festivals, All Roads and New York Jewish Film Festival, all looked at 200 or 300 other titles as well. And then we had titles that were curated that came from distributors, and they're from a whole different separate pool.
Yeah. It's humbling because you just can't see it all.
Well, one of the highlights, you know, is obviously, you know, I had one when I obviously don't encourage a filmmaker to email or call. We will notify everybody. But one called and started crying when I accepted her. And then on the other hand, there's the more percentage of the rejection letter. And in the rejection letter, we joke that, you know, your child has a better chance of going Ivy League or University of Virginia than your film did getting into this. And that gets, you know, makes them
That's
relax
kind of
a little bit. No, it's not obnoxious. They like it, actually.
Oh, okay.
Because they feel like, okay, this is really a challenge. This was...
Now, we have to turn the spotlight on you, Stephen Rubin. You yourself are actually involved in one way or another in 5 different films that are at the film festival this year.
Yeah, and that's not just because it's he picked him, so you can blame him if you don't like him.
Well, they're actually different other directors, so he's mostly involved as an actor.
Yeah, I directed one.
We didn't show 5 of his titles.
No, I didn't. Yeah. Well, so the ones that I'm in one called Shedding Skin, which is by Adam McLean and Jonas, don't recall Jonas' last name, two young first-time filmmakers who really deserve credit for making one of the few New Mexico features that we're showing. And I just – ironically, I play a thug. I think that was the joke.
You play a thug?
Yeah. And then a woman from Albuquerque made a film called Breaking and Entering, and I'm getting very typecast, and I'm trying to break out of it, as everybody who gets typecast is. But now that I've lost weight and have this new look – but before that as a sort of gross out person, and I was a derelict dad in Breaking and Entering. And then the NM Film Intensive that the governor helped sponsor through the College of Santa Fe, the 9-month certificate program, I was in Bump in the Night. And again, I was there for the laughs. I was the disgusting roommate. And then the one that I actually directed, produced, wrote, that I'm most proud of, you know, I've done a lot of films that I've been proud of, but this is really the biggest in the sense of it's a SAG film. I have some wonderful actors, and it's called The Lives of Angels. And it's over 50 minutes, and it's got, you know, Raul Trujillo, who I mentioned earlier, and it has a gentleman I'm very glad to have met who just moved here in the summer with his wife, Jimmy Kennedy, who was in Glory, one of the main characters, just so you recognize him. He was the one with the stutter. And working with Raul and Jimmy and everyone else, Nicholas Ballas, who hasn't been acting for a while, a local actor, was in it, and J.D. Garfield, Jenny Gabriel. There's 11 sort of lead ensemble. Willa Root and I and Jody Hagerty are the sort of three humans, and it's about angels and the devil, played by Morris Duty. And it was just phenomenal for me to work at that level, because a lot of what I've done at the feature level has been improv, which I love, and we are doing again after the festival. We're doing with Rick Schmidt another 10-day film, like Mirage. And
yeah, this 10-day film thing is quite a phenomenon.
Yeah, we did Mirage and Rick's Canoe, which got much acclaim from local patrons and press. So last year we couldn't do it, but this year we've got a crew together. So we shoot for 5 days and we edit for 5 days, and then it's locked, and it's very organic. And, you know, some people are very attracted to the films when they see it because there's these true life stories that are told, and it's, you know, it feels more natural than a mainstream film. And other people are just like, you know, all right, where's the action? What's going on here? Where's the plot? But, you know, Lives of Angels was wonderful because it was working with especially, you know, well, all of them, and I don't want to single anybody out, but, you know, with Raul's experience and the directors he's worked with, Terry Malick, one of my favorite directors, and Jimmy Kennedy, having worked with Edward Zwick, a phenomenal director, was a little daunting. I took deep breaths. You know, they'd bring up those directors, and I'd just say, okay, that's fine. But what I learned from them, it was just fascinating. And you know, Jimmy is – it took me months, and he still sometimes calls me Mr. Rubin and you know, comes in and shakes all the crew's hands. And just – we all learned so much, and the crew was wonderful of local people that worked on it. And Maura, you know, just really – shined as the devil and made it funny. You know, we tried to do things in a non-traditional way, and the whole movie really, I guess maybe when you make a movie with angels in the title, it's been blessed because every time we've needed something, it's been like, okay, who's going to do special effects? And Jonathan Lowe is my really filmmaking partner. He's my director of photography and editor. It's like, well, who's going to do special effects? And then suddenly Ann Farrell calls, well, you know, I'm retired now and I would like a project and I'm not worried about money. And she's terrific at that kind of stuff. So she's added the effects and Jamie Chase, a local artist, contributed it, and music is coming from John Kurzweg and Henry Herman, who are major music industry people that live here. So, you know, a lot of people, almost 40 people are contributing on that. And I'm so proud to be able to get them together. And again, back to, you know, working as director, actor with Raul and Jimmy and everyone else, it's just like learning that dialogue, I think, has been great for me and will help me in my future. And if anybody wants advice as to how, because when you're dealing with actors with that experience, it's very different than if you just grab some friends and make a 10-minute film. You know, there's things that they expect, and not that they were prima donnas or anything. They were terrific, but it's a level that was really fun for me to move up to.
And the name of the film, again, is?
The Lives of Angels.
The Lives of Angels. So, ladies and gentlemen, check that out. John Bowman, do you have time for your own creative pursuits as besides being executive director of the Santa Fe Film Festival?
Well, I won a screenwriting award at the University of Alabama.
Really?
In a contest there. And it's a story that it's not set in New Mexico whatsoever. It's a comedy set on a cruise ship. It's a plastic surgery cruise ship where you go to sea and you come back as a different person.
Oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. And is a film going to be made?
No, I had some bites from some people that were interested in buying the idea for television series, and I wasn't really eager after working a year on it to do that. But hopefully once the festival kind of subsides as part of what I do, more permanently, I can start to take some of the scripts I have. They're all comedies and work them over and pitch more of them.
When you have a script, I mean, this is, you know, you win an award, you put your heart and soul into it. Do you try to pitch it to Hollywood and go through the commercial studios? Do you try to do it independently? What's your avenue?
Well, mostly you would do it through people you know at different studios. I have not really pitched things independently because most of the titles that I've written and screenplays are really, in a sense, studio pictures. In my mind, they're studio pictures. They're not independent.
Have you in your mind cast them with well-known people?
Of course.
We won't necessarily talk about who that is right now.
No.
We're talking to John Bowman and Stephen Rubin about the Santa Fe Film Festival. One of the nice things about the Santa Fe Film Festival, it's party time.
Yeah. Well, we have and I'd like to thank two people on our staff, Tantri Weege, our hospitality coordinator, and Melanie Moore, our events programmer. And we've been working together. Our two major sponsors that are ramping up the social events. We've always had good social events, but our CBS and Heineken, and they're turning the Hotel Santa Fe. And thanks very much to Suzanne Brown and Paul Markins at Hotel Santa Fe for allowing this to happen. We're going to have a tent with heating, and it's going to be from Wednesday through Friday all day. The idea with CBS, it's the CBS Showbuzz Hospitality Suite, and it's open to the public. So it's open not just to pick up your badge, but they want everyone there interacting, filmmakers, press, patrons, anybody. So come in, you know, there'll be food from the hotel and some drinks. And
that's at the Hotel Santa Fe.
And then what happens is a happy hour for badge holders only. Unfortunately, we can't open Heineken's happy hour to everyone. But
badge holders is something. If you buy a pass for the whole film festival, you're a badge holder.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and that's from 5 to 7 on Wednesday to Friday. And the goal is you used to do what was called the press breakfasts, and the press weren't coming. So instead of
– it's kind of early in the morning.
It's a little too early for the press.
So it's early for everybody. So instead of filmmakers wiping their eyes, get them greased up with a couple of drinks and then but it really is about networking. You know, for CBS, it's about interaction. For Heineken, it's about Heineken's name getting out there, of course, but also just about networking. They're involved with a lot of festivals. CBS is just getting into this and really supporting us in a major way. We're going to be on their website soon, and their cameras are going to be out here a couple days.
What's CBS's interest in supporting a film festival like Santa Fe's?
Well, they said when they contacted me is they're interested in content, and I won't name the certain festival, but it's one that you all know very well. They said they're not interested in that festival at all. They're not interested in a certain actress falling out of a bar. They mentioned the actress, but I'm not going to be that mean. They're interested in content. And National Geographic had gotten their attention, and just the programming that John and I have been doing over the years, you know, the fact that we're not thematic, the eclecticness, the fact that we have well over 200 filmmakers here, and also New Mexico's filmmaking scene, thanks to the film office and the governor, you know, all of that together is what attracted them, and Santa Fe itself as a destination town. I think that's what CBS is looking for.
I think, too, a lot of the companies have been moving more towards sponsoring of live events, and I don't mean just film festivals, but music events or community kind of functions, because the media business, as you know, has become so splintered, and people can turn to radio and any number of stations, to any number of outlets on the internet for information, for television, for press, daily newspapers, etc. And so the companies are starting to say, well, why don't we put ourselves out in an event that would be covered by all, as opposed to trying to be in all those outlets.
The Santa Fe Film Festival opens this Wednesday, runs through the weekend. You can go to – what's your website?
SantaFeFilmFestival.com.
SantaFeFilmFestival.com.
And there's one woman that we didn't mention. Do I have a second? We're very proud to be having the homecoming of Aviva, who grew up here and went to L.A. and is now one of the hot young actresses, because she was one of the female stars of Superbad. And she made an independent film called Forgiving the Franklins that we're showcasing, with directed by Jay Floyd. So we're proud to be
– in the same vein, people should go check out Cheap Magic Inside, Zach Condon and right. His band Beirut from Santa Fe and Albuquerque. Videos that they won't be playing. This is a video they created in Paris and in Brooklyn, based on their new record, Flying Cup Cafe, I believe it's called.
Zach's overseas recording, so he couldn't come. But
this will be – people will be able to see it.
Here, yeah.
Well, John Bowman and Stephen Rubin of the Santa Fe Film Festival, I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for all you do.
And I hope everyone goes to the movies.
We'll see you around the festival. Everyone.
Yes, indeed. And I will be featuring nothing but film this week on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. So keep your ears tuned to Santa Fe's only public radio station. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz.